I think understanding how long it takes is a big one. It's funny because when we talk to different startups, they're like, yeah, I'm just going to go out and I'm going to raise $3 million. We're like, yeah, good luck. Like, the people just think it's easy because you see the headlines of people raising money.
That's the problem, isn't
it? It's a huge problem. And it's such a fallacy that people think that it's just really easy to raise money because people are doing it. It's really hard to raise money. Our seed round, we spoke to probably about 100 investors before getting a, yeah, we'll talk to you, let alone, yeah, this is cool.
How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, we have returning guests. We've Dan and Kieran, the co-founders of Protex. This gives me a buzz to be able to bring people back who I've predicted will be a huge success and to be right. 2 years ago, they were on, they'd raised $18 million and they were growing at a rapid scale. Today, I'm incredibly happy to announce they've just raised a $36 million round and this is their story. It takes courage and belief in yourself and your business idea to take the step to set up your own business. In the early stages, entrepreneurship can be a lonely road, even through those milestone moments. Deciding to commit to the idea you've been mulling over, learning, growing, and developing your skills, building a team to help you along the way, preparing to launch into new markets. Enterprise Ireland is there for all of those startup moments. From providing advice and guidance to new founders through our startup network, to pre-seed funding and early investment, we're here to help bring your ambition to fruition. To find out how Enterprise Ireland can help you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share a game changer for your business, Azure Communications. When it comes to print and marketing solutions, these folks, led by CEO Jenny Johnston, are the real deal. Whether you need an eye-catching brochure, sleek business cards, or a full-blown digital campaign, Azure Communications has you covered. They're not just about high-quality prints or digital campaigns, they're also about delivering great results. And here's the best part. Just for listeners of The Entrepreneur Experiment, you can get 20% off your first order. Just give them a call or go online and use the code FOX20. With personalized service and fast turnaround times, Azure Communications will help you make the impact your business deserves. Trust me, when it comes to making your brand stand out, Azure Communications is the provider of choice. Check them out at azurecom.ie, use code FOX20 and elevate your marketing game today. Nostra, an Irish IT company, offers world-class managed IT services, cloud solutions, IT support, and more, all tailored to meet your business needs. Whether you're streamlining operations or boosting productivity, their expert team is ready to help. Visit nostra.ie or email info@nostra.ie to see how they can solve your IT challenges today. Lads, welcome back to the pod.
Thanks, Harry.
This is a special pod. I made a prediction on the podcast and you called that out. We had a meeting a few weeks ago.
We did.
And you called it out. You said you made a prediction on your podcast in 2023. It might be coming true.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah, we had a very hectic, busy 24. Was it April 23?
April 23.
We talked. You said 24 was going to be a big year for us. Mm. And that was 24 a big year for us.
Mm. Give me the headline.
Lots of team growth, lots of customer growth, and as of the end of 24, we closed a 36 million Series B, which was a pretty nice way to cap off the year.
It's just before Christmas as well. Remember, like, leading up to, we were like, oh no, it's going to go past Christmas, going to ruin our Christmas, because our Series A, we had to do three, I think we did it through Christmas.
Yeah.
So we didn't have any Christmas then, so it was nice to kind of like tie it up, put the pin in it, and we were like, great, let's rock into 25.
Yeah, got some bit of a break for Christmas. We went skiing actually last week. Two of us haven't skied before. We learned how to ski last week, but that was a nice little break, reset, and really excited about 25 as to what it has to bring.
It's good for you, but I'm really going to claim the credit for that prediction.
We actually said it. We looked internally. We said, guys, we've already promised we're going to do a good job here.
We promised on the podcast, Gary.
So we can't screw this up.
That's unreal, lads. Congrats, first of all. That is absolutely huge. You, when you were on last, you'd raised 18 million. So this is a further 36.
Yep.
Big
so
numbers.
54 overall.
Big numbers.
Mm-hmm. Big numbers. Yeah. Big numbers, big ambitions. But I think even since we've, you know, since we were on the pod last, the team has grown massively. As I said, customers have grown massively. We've started to become more of an actual business than a startup. We've had a lot of, a lot of tricky weeks, a lot of fantastic weeks. Learned a lot over the last year and a half, but it's been a bit of a roller coaster last year, and excited for Watch 25.
Let's give a timestamp and give some context to people. So first of all, give me the overview, the spiel, what you guys do.
Sure. So Protex AI, we started in summer 2021. We did a program called Y Combinator, which a few of the viewers might have heard of, but it's an accelerator program out in San Fran. We did it during COVID. We did it from the west of Limerick, or in Limerick, west of Ireland, rather than west of the States. So it's slightly less, some people would say less glamorous. Castle Troy, I guess, you know, they do say Castle Troy is like the San Francisco of Ireland. Very few people say that. But yeah, started in 2021. But what Protex does is we link in with existing CCTV cameras in like warehouses and factories to identify danger before people get hurt. So the system looks at behavior trends using computer vision to spot the behavior patterns that will lead to accidents, so that companies can stop behavior patterns rather than waiting for accidents to occur. And we work with some major companies like DHL and in the world, but like mostly Fortune 500 companies now.
And then set the context for the last pod, 23. What stage were you at?
So I think we had about, 28 people in the team. We were after closing some big customers, and really back then we were trying to figure out, okay, we know enterprise customers really like this product. It's really driving value. We're actually starting to see an ROI from that. But how can we go from, you know, our business model is we sell to the likes of a DHL, we'll sell to a site or a couple of sites, and then we'll look to expand that account. And so what's changed maybe in the last year is we've built a lot of product, a lot of iteration on what Dan is just after touching on, from, you know, bringing in generative AI to figure out, okay, if we can actually figure out what specific shift or what specific area of the site is actually causing issues, can we actually invest more in terms of resources or whatnot into that area? Product has developed a lot, and we've really started to understand how we can actually drive more value when there's more sites live with our product. So looking at trends across different geographies, I think we're in, what, 4 countries back when we were chatting to you in 23. We're in about 22 countries now, all the way down to New Zealand, which is pretty crazy. Had to try and figure out how to ship we have a server that we ship out to our clients, to figure out how to ship a server out to New Zealand, which was an interesting topic internally. But yeah, just massive growth and lots of figuring stuff out. You know, as startups go, lots of things break. You need to rebuild them, refigure them out. And I think in the last year, it's really been figuring out how do we do this at scale. You know, it's all well and good doing this in a couple of sites with massive companies, but how do you actually roll that out at scale? And that takes a really kind of concerted effort of the whole team. So installing it, you know, closing the deal from the sales side, installing it, driving success, getting the product team involved to understand what different features and different areas we can explore past the initial deployment. And that's just been a lot of learning last year. Mm.
And when you say expanding it out, so you have like, break us down as to how it works. So you have like a server that goes out to a site and that controls that site, that looks at that site. So then you have to do that multiple times.
Yeah, so if you think about a classical CCTV system that sits on any, you know, any large manufacturer, we work with mainly manufacturing and logistics sites. Any modern site usually has a good CCTV system. So the CCTV system will have cameras in the corners of the rooms, or off beams coming down from the ceiling. They'll plug straight into what's called a network video recorder. Network video recorder is probably where a lot of people watch their CCTV streams. So usually used for security purposes, or if something happens, if an accident happens, then they'll go and say, hey, actually, let's look and see what happened and maybe do an audit, do an investigation. What we do is we plug in on top of that system. So we leverage that existing system that's already there, and we deploy a server essentially to that site that runs our whole AI engine. So processes every stream that comes through, understands the interaction between the individuals in the scene, the objects, the vehicles, the environment. And then it makes, you know, predictions as to what's actually happening in that scene. Is the forklift getting too near to the person? Is the person lifting the box incorrectly? Is the person on their mobile phone while they're walking down a corridor and a forklift comes across? So all of these behavioral characteristics that will actually, if they keep happening, lead to an accident, they're all the types of things that we pick up in Protex.
And to compare that, how that's currently done, basically safety overall and operations. So safety and operations is all reactive. You got to wait for something bad to happen before a company says, oh crap, that's a problem. We got to do something about it. So we've had some cases with some of our clients globally where they've had someone getting smashed by a forklift and dying. So these aren't paper cuts we're dealing with. It's usually a case of a fatality or someone losing a limb or things like that, where someone's got hit by a forklift, they go, oh crap, that's a problem. And then they'll go back through the CCTV and try to figure out why that happened. Whereas we're being proactive in this sense and giving them that information beforehand. We had a client in the States who, they had this machine, a labeling machine for bread basically. And 6 weeks before we were there, if a label gets caught in the machine, you're supposed to go turn off the machine, come back and take off the label, then go back and turn the machine on. That's not what people do. They didn't know that. Someone put their hand on the machine and he ripped off three of his fingers. So it's stuff like that we're dealing with rather than the case of paper cuts.
Yeah. It's like when you used to drive past a construction site and it used to be like days since an accident.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, that's wild.
Yeah.
You have to like count it down. Yeah. I know I can see the psychology going, look, it's been 500 days. But I always thought of what happens on the 501st day when Jimmy falls off the ladder.
Yeah, wants to be the guy that wipes that out and has but one?
Yeah,
right. Exactly. So that's kind of where we get.
And it's crazy. A lot of sites are still operating that way, and they're really trying to figure out how do we get past that? How do we get past this sign that says, "Hey, 500 days since an accident"? And that's what our data allows them to do. It gives them the information to say, on your site for the last week in this specific shift or in this specific area, this specific risk is something that's trending upwards. And so you probably should do something about it. Mm. And before Protex, how did they do that? They do that with site walks. They walk around the site with a checklist. They say, Gary's after lifting that box incorrectly. We should have a chat with Gary later.
But everyone's doing it correctly because they're all looking.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Psychology, you do it correctly when everyone's watching you. Whereas it's like you said, when you're on the phone on a Tuesday morning, when you're not really thinking. Mm. So it's been a weird time since we talked. Like 2023 was just kind of the end of the COVID boom. Mm. Everyone's raising money. Whereas you've kind of bucked the trend now. You've raised a huge amount of money at a time when it's been kind of quiet. Why? What's been different for you?
I think good companies always raise. Like from the get-go, like a lot of people say, oh, it's a difficult market and stuff, but good companies will always raise. I feel like we're definitely in that wheelhouse. So I think it's just like there's money out there. They always talk about dry powder. That's around, and there is that. It's just a matter of finding it, or for us, thankfully, was them finding us. So I think it's really a matter of understanding if you're building something great, people will come, and that's not only from a customer perspective, that's from an investor's perspective too.
There's also definitely been a massive shift in the AI space, as we've all seen over the last while, but going from the perceptual AI, the kind of visual, what we're working on, which is computer vision, the how does AI actually listen to what you're saying? How does it understand what you're saying? All of that stuff. We've then went on to generative AI. How do we take that and actually generate something from what we have? And I think there's been a shift into physical AI in the last while, where investors are super interested in how does this, these AI agents that are coming out that make decisions for you, how can they actually make decisions for manufacturing sites? And we've definitely seen a shift in the investor space and in the market, where I think NVIDIA even have a graph that looks like this, and I think physical AI is at the top of it. And so we've probably been lucky in that sense, in that the market that we're in is growing. The customers that we're selling to are starting to really understand the value of the technology. And you bring those two things together, and investors that are interested in investing, and I think it makes for a good conversation we've been having over the last while.
I think you two think about this differently, though. From having conversations with you and from just kind of on the outside looking in, you seem to approach this differently, the fundraising sphere differently. Like, how do you do it? Tell me your secret sauce about fundraising.
Yeah, I think we've been very lucky in that we haven't had to outbound at all, especially this round. We didn't have to outbound whatsoever. But I think...
What does that mean? You weren't going around the houses pitching yourselves?
No, not at all. It was all kind of off the back. I think we had a good year. A couple of people heard about it. The cool thing about it is like... A lot of our investors are London-based, and in London, everybody knows each other. They go play golf. All the VCs go play golf or tennis and stuff together. So they all tend to talk and say, hey, have you heard of Protex or whatever it is? But I think from our perspective, we're kind of moving in this such a way that we don't have time to do that. And we don't want to do that. We want to be able to spend our time building the business rather than the case of just raising money, because raising money doesn't necessarily mean that you're building a fantastic business. But from our perspective, I think the way we ran it was very much a case of, working with the investors rather than the case of us pitching. There's so many VCs out there and there's so much money out there is that it's a lot of time. It's a startup trying to go claw for it, a lot of it. But if you can flip that and actually have genuine conversations, you get the cream of the crop VCs, not only from a perspective of really good VCs, but also from the perspective of VCs who care about what you're doing. So what I mean by that is if you can work with an investor and try to get them to build a thought process or build a theory about your market, then you're actually having a conversation.
And how do you do that?
So what we did was we asked them all to create a thesis around Protex and the market from the offset. So we didn't want to have it a case where we were the ones informing them of what the market is. We wanted them to be able to go do their own research for it. And
so you made them work.
Yeah, in a great sense, you know, and it weeds out the ones that are just window shopping.
And so they'd inbound you and say, hey guys, you're raising. And you'd be like, oh, we might be what we want you to figure out. What would you say to them? Like, how do you even phrase that?
So you have a really honest conversation. I think that's a big thing about it. You have an honest conversation and start to say, hey, look, we're considering it. This is what we do from a company perspective. What we'd love to do is get your take on it. And the investors who really care, who actually want to get to do business with you will say, I hear you. Let me go back and do that. The ones who don't will be like, hey, why don't you send me stuff or send me some content stuff? And you have to be like, well, we're clearly at different stages here. Why don't you come back to me when you've had that? But the best investors and the ones that we were talking to through the whole process said that they were like really keen. And they said, I hear you. Let's go do that. We'll come back with it. And they came back with it.
And then we had a back conversation.
Yeah, so they come back with, as Dan said, a thesis. So their vision for what the market is, why they think the market is going to be big, you know, what they think is going to win in the market, what's important, what's not important. And what's really nice about that is, one, you get investors that really care, but two, you get investors that are really educated about what we're doing. Mm. And it makes for this really nice conversation. Instead of it being an actual transactional conversation where it's like, hey, as Protex, we're looking to raise money here. We're actually interested to get your take. And we want to have a conversation. We want to challenge the way you're thinking about it. We want you to challenge us as well. And some of the best conversations we've had with, you know, investors in this round have come to us and said, hey, I actually think you're off on that. I actually don't agree with that.
Interesting.
And it's great. We love getting challenged and we love being challenged to iterate on the way we're thinking about things. And when you're running a process like that, the worst thing you can do, and you know, we've had it for maybe really early days, you get really robotic. You have a pitch, you do the pitch 101 times. I think one time when we were doing our pre-seed, we came off a call and we said that was actually really bad because it sounded so robotic. Let's scrap everything we're doing and just go back to basics in terms of let's actually just be ourselves and be really authentic. And that's where the best conversations come from. Yeah. It's where the best relationships are built from. And it's where when you get an investor that puts a term sheet down, you can be really confident that they have the same, you know, vision for where the market is going, for where Protex is going. And that makes us really excited.
And it's also fucking boring having to do like the same conversation over and again. We want to come into the conversations like buzzing coming out of it. Same with them. You know, it's like same thing in sales. You want to come out of it that everybody wins. But if you're going in and just like talking crap the whole time, it's just going to be boring. So you want the investors to challenge you, have a conversation, tear into each other, because that's fun. And that's why investing, especially like it is an incredibly tiring process, and time consuming process. But if you can make it enjoyable, that it's not just a case of us pitching the whole time, showing the same slide deck, that's where things get really fun.
Why is it such a long process? Because you hear this from every founder going, oh, it was so long and it was tiring and it was stressful. Why is it so long, do you think?
I think it doesn't have to be terribly long. Like, I don't think our process overall in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't like a year or anything like that. It was a couple of months from when we opened the data room to closing the data room was 3.5 days. So it was really, really short from when we got to that stage, but we had done all the work leading up to it with those investors. So we were okay with it. I think it's more a case of why is it time consuming? Is it takes you totally out of the business because you have to build, you're essentially looking at your own business from the inside and outside and building your data room and everything like that. And that takes forever in the financials. And thankfully, Kieran's fantastic at that.
What's a data room?
So a data room is essentially a collection of all of your history of your financials, where you're taking the business from a future perspective, what your team looks like, especially when you get to B level, a lot more of it's based around finance and what you've done, your margins, your gross profit margins, stuff like that. And you put that all together in essentially a Google folder and you say, here you go. This is our 3 years of our business. Check it out. And they can look at it and they query it. And then what the time it takes after it as well is like due diligence. So they'll speak to our customers, they'll speak to our team, and they'll drill in us and they'll look at us even personally and stuff and do different conversations with us from different levels.
How does it feel as a founder? Because that's quite exposing. How did you feel personally doing that?
It's intense. It's and maybe to go back to the question, why is it so long? You know, it can be long or it can not be long, but it feels like an eternity. Because for that time when you're raising money, everything in here is about raising money. So weekends, when you're going to sleep, what you're probably dreaming about, it's all about raising money and all about the fundraising process. So your ability to actually switch off and get away time is really important. And we probably did it well and not so well. Some weeks were good, some weeks weren't so good. I think the first days we opened the data room, where we actually sent the data room out. I think we were up till 6 a.m. the night before, 2 hours sleep, back up. We'd visitors in the office to pitch to. And so it's just extremely exhausting. It's the same thing every day. And so that's to go back to what Dan said, to make it a small bit more enjoyable. You want people to come and challenge you, challenging the way you're thinking about it, challenging you, said, hey, on this slide, you have, you know, this projection, or you're thinking about product this way, or this is on your roadmap. Talking to customers actually don't think that. Now, luckily for us, when the investors went to talk to our customers are really excited about what we're building. They're excited to invest more in it. It's part of their AI strategy. And so investors got really, really excited from chatting to our customers. But it definitely is intrusive. For 2, 3, 4 weeks, you're eating, sleeping, drinking, dreaming about the process.
The drinking stuff, actually.
Yeah.
You have to go drink it all the time and
you mean literally the drinking.
Yeah. Literally you're going out and you're having drinks and the next day you're meeting another investor and go for more drinks and stuff. That's actually quite taxing, funny enough. But there was one that 6 a.m. one was a really funny one where we had a lot of investors flying over to us, to our office and stuff. And it was and it's a performance. You gotta go in and you gotta perform. And we were up, I think it was 2:30, and I was like, or it's 3:00, and I was like, geez, we're wrecked here now. And it's Kieran and a few of our team on. I was like, look, we have people coming in at 8 a.m. I'm going to bed. Guys, try to get to bed in the next half hour. And I came on I got back up at 6:30, and they literally just finished it. So Kieran had to do a really quick turnaround from doing all the information and straight in and talk to investors for 6 hours. So that's where it gets intense. But it's when you're in it, it's really, really tough. When you look back on it and get that reflection, it's like, well, that was really cool that we were able to pull that off.
What changed between the first raise and the second raise? Personally, how did you change between the first and second?
I think one of the biggest changes is, Dan talked about us being out of the business, which we were. We were fundamentally out of the business for 3 months. And that's hard because you're trying to balance things and you just realize you can't balance. And so you need to focus on one thing and do it really well. We now have a fantastic team that's grown and matured with us. We have a leadership team that was able to run the business for us while we were away, which was, fantastic. Probably the first test they had of us being completely out and they had to run it. But us probably as founders, I think we've been through a lot last year. There's been a lot of learnings, a lot of, as Dan said, reflection on, okay, what's worked, what hasn't worked. So we probably just matured. And as Dan said, you don't really feel that maturing or that learning as you're going through the process, because you just got to wake up every day and you got to keep going. But when you take time, maybe this pod, to actually sit down and say, oh, actually, what did we do last year? What did we learn? We probably matured a lot through the failures, through the learning where things didn't work and iterating to make it work, through closing big deals, through closing some of the smaller deals, and just constantly iterating to try and get better. One of our cultural values is about growth mindset and continually looking to get better and better and better and looking inwardly to figure out how you can get better and better. And so as we got to that process, we probably knew exactly who we are as founders. We know what our dynamic is. I know what my job is. Dan knows what his job is. And so running the process was quite seamless in terms of knowing exactly what we had to do. It was just about going through the ringer.
I think the difference between A and B as well is it's a lot more based off from seed to a B. Seed is all dream, vision, things like that, and you don't even need any revenue really to raise money. A still has a little bit of that. B still has a little bit of that for sure, but it starts to kind of, if you're thinking about the ratio, it goes from vision to how you're actually doing. And that will change the further round you go. So if you go to a Series C, Series E, it's all finance and all your background, less so on kind of your vision stuff. B is a nice one because it's kind of a 50-50. a little bit. I think that was the biggest change from if you're actually looking at raising an A to a B. A is more on, still more on vision. B is more on like performance.
What do you know now that you wish you'd known when you were raising your first round of funding?
Good question. I think understanding how long it takes is a big one. It's funny because when we talk to different startups, they're like, we've gone to talks and they're giving talks and things like that, where they're like, yeah, I'm just going to go out and I'm going to raise 3 million. We're like, yeah, good luck. Like, the people just think it's easy because you see the headlines of people raising money.
That's the problem, isn't it?
It's a huge problem. And it's such a fallacy that people think that it's just really easy to raise money because people are doing it. It's really hard to raise money. Like our seed round, which Elkstone led and Playfair, we spoke to probably about 100 investors before getting a, yeah, we'll talk to you, let alone, yeah, this is cool. And I think a big thing, twofold. One, people can get really knocked down on, oh, I got a no from an investor, this is probably a really bad idea. But it's not, you just got to find the right investor who's like...
But just pause on that for 1 second. 100 investors. Just, even if you break that down into, that's 100 hours, just meetings. And never mind the prep, never mind the travel, like you're talking... months and months and months and months and months of work.
Yeah, I think your first round is your hardest round to raise, I would have said.
Yeah, for us it probably was. I think it took us 6 months and we had so many conversations, but again, to flip that on its head and actually use that process as a learning opportunity. When you're raising pre-seed or seed or any round really, it's an opportunity from you again to learn from investors. And what Dan is fantastic at, and what it's really great for us as a team is, you know, Dan is always talking to investors. He feeds that information back and it gives us a proxy for what's actually happening in the market. How are investors thinking about the AI space, which is like a proxy for economically, how are people investing in AI?
Oh, interesting. I get you. Yeah.
And so that process is really interesting where you're constantly talking to investors, to people who want to put money into something, into some space, and they're trying to figure out where do they want to put it into. And especially in pre-seed and seed, where you're still trying to figure product market fit out, and you're still trying to figure out, if I actually raise money here, can I have a $1 billion exit? Is this product that I'm building important enough and valuable enough that people are actually going to pay me continuously and continuously, that it's going to add enough value to them as a customer? And that going through that process it helps you hone your pitch. It helps you hone your go-to-market. It helps you hone, like, what are we actually building here and how can I actually describe it? And so again, to go back to like the failure thing, all of those 100 failures helped us figure out what our final pitch was, and it helped us iterate towards what the product actually is today. It didn't change massively, but the way we actually thought about it, you know, initially for us, we thought, oh, we can actually stop accidents from happening. We can see a forklift coming around the corner, predict that it's going to hit into someone and then do something. And when we talked to investors and we talked to health and safety people, that's really, really hard. Because accidents are very, very, very rare. They happen, but they're rare. And so instead we switched it to, actually, can we see what happens before that forklift hits the person? How many times has that forklift nearly hit the person? And so that was like a learning that came out of our initial pre-seed conversations.
I just find it so interesting because the AI space is so noisy. And it's so full of spoofers as well. Like, everyone's an AI now.
That's the thing, Gary. Everybody builds to trends. That's the absolute crap. You see people coming in. I was on Instagram the other day and saw AI dumbbells. What the hell did AI dumbbell? Yeah? So everybody's doing it.
I was watching Landman, that new series with Billy Bob, and he was talking about, like, the, you know, what happens in a boom. And it's like, you know, first come the mad ones, then come the bankers, then comes the innovators, then comes the liars, then comes the thieves. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the same with AI, right?
You kind of have
the mad innovators like yourselves who are in there just building something. And then flash forward like 21 to 25, 4 years later, when now everyone's here. Whereas, like, I find it so interesting when companies are already here and they're already building and now the wave is taking them up. It's really, really interesting to see a company like yourselves who are building something that actually makes so much sense, as opposed to they're just building a feature. So many people are just building a little feature that fits on top of something, whereas it's not really fundamentally changing anything.
Yeah, you got it. I think the best way to build business is actually stay out of trends. It sounds really weird. Like, we were building AI when we were first started pitching to clients. They were like, "What's AI again?" Yeah. You know, like, and which is so funny to think of it in the world we're in now. In the last 18 months, or not even last like year, the uptake has been massive in the inbound we've gotten. You know, and it's now accessible. it's now a thing that, like, that's what our clients seen. Like Kira mentioned, like, people are coming to us and saying, how do I run this project, or how do I bring it into my AI? There's now an AI strategy people are bringing in, and we're fitting into that.
And I think that's, there's definitely a really interesting trend happening on, so we sell to enterprise companies. There's a really interesting trend happening with enterprise companies where they have AI strategies right down from the top. So the CEO says, okay, we actually need an AI strategy here. This is going to be big. We need to make sure that we understand it, that we know how we're going to roll it out. We know what problems it's going to solve. And so we've a couple of customers where we are the first AI product that they've actually bought. And they're trying to figure out, how do we actually buy this? How do we validate this? How do you make sure that ethically it ticks boxes? How do you make sure from a data privacy, from a cybersecurity? And for me, I really enjoy those conversations because I get to talk to these big enterprise IT teams. I was on a call a couple of weeks ago with 20 IT people in a big Fortune 500 company. And the conversation was just an educational conversation. They were asking me questions. I was asking them questions about how they make decisions. And when those conversations go away from a sales conversation to actually we're having conversations as peers here and we're educating each other on from the enterprise side, how they're thinking about it, and from the startup side, the way we're thinking about it, it's really, really enjoyable. So I think it's just shifting everything. It's even the way we build product is shifting. Our product managers now are starting to think about how can they actually relinquish control of the features that they're building and actually give the purest form of an interface to the client themselves. So we have a product called Copilot. Dan isn't such a fan of the name, given Microsoft's Copilot. So we've had lots of internal debates about that. But Copilot for us is an interface to the data that we collect. And it allows our customers to ask questions about their site, about specific areas, about specific times, about specific trends.
They can actually interact with it. They can interact with it.
And when you think about it, at its core, it's the purest form of interaction between the technology that's actually delivering the value and the user who's essentially the product manager. And so you're taking our product manager out of the loop and you're making the user the product manager. The user is directing the experience. They're telling the system exactly what they're looking for. And what's really nice about that is our product managers and designers then can take that feedback directly. The users are already getting the value because it's giving them the information they want. But it also points us towards actually this is what customers are asking for. So while they're already getting the value, let's build more value on top of that. And so it's just shifting everything. It's shifting the way we operate as a business, even internally, how we make decisions. So it's an exciting time to be an AI company.
How have you scaled? Because when we talked in 2023, you were selling into enterprise companies, which in itself is quite a challenging task, I think. And you talk to any B2B startup and they're like, it's just so long and it's just so hard. How have you cracked that? Because you seem to have cracked that quite early. And how has that changed since we spoke last?
I think we love the ugly sale. And I personally love the ugly sale. I think it's like this mountain you have to overcome a little bit. I think when you look at enterprise, from our perspective, it's a lot of like, it's top down and bottom up selling. Like you can sell, B2C, which is totally different. It's very transactional. It's product led growth and things like that, which is an awesome types of companies to build. But our ticket sizes are quite significant. It's in the tens, hundreds of thousands. And when you do that, you have to get a lot of stakeholders involved. But I really do feel like we've cracked the enterprise sale in a really nice sense. We put a lot of effort into the relationships side of things, and not for the sake of the sale, genuinely because we like doing that. Like there's lots of clients that we work with and I'm genuinely friends with them. I'll go spend time with them. I'll go golfing or hang out with them or whatever it may be. And I think that's why we like the enterprise sale a lot, is because it's very relationship based selling, and you get to know people a lot more because you're spending more time with them. And I think that's where you win a lot in it, because if you come in with the mindset of this is a transaction, you're losing. If you come into like this is a partnership or a relationship, that's where you tend to win a lot more. So from our perspective, yes, it's long, but it's really worth it because you're building, especially what we're doing, because you build for the first sale and then you build for the second sale, the third sale. So those are your expansions. And that's where you get really ingrained in companies. And that's where you see, if you can start with a small pilot per se or whatever it is, and then you can expand through them and then they become dependent on the system, everybody wins because they're getting a lot of value out of it. And that takes time to be able to do that first sale, second sale through it.
I think it's really interesting because there's been such a rush towards like automate everything and remove everything, especially even you look at AI, just the humans are removed from every single process. And I think people are so scared of that as well. But it's so interesting to hear an AI company say, no, it's about the relationships. Yeah. It's about the people, because people are just so obsessed with scaling everything, scale at all costs, that it's so interesting to hear like a high growth tech company talk about the relationships of even, business.
I think from the outset, we did a talk with a company called The Table Group not too long ago. And they said, you build a business in general for three reasons. It's the problem, the purpose, or the people. Yes, we love the purpose and the problem, but from our perspective, and that's where me and Kieran are very similar, is we really love the people aspect of what we're building. I remember there's one thing that really hit home with me, whereas we were with one of the guys on the team, Alonso, this is a couple of years ago, and it kind of changed the perspective of why we're doing this. And he said, you know, Dan, it's not just me who's part of this business, it's my family, it's my son and my wife. And that was like, whoa, that's what we're building here.
That's heavy.
Yeah. And like, you can make as much money, and yeah, that's what we're out here to not only make money for us, for our team, for our investors and things like that. But at the end of the day, it comes down to the people. And when you walk into the office and have fun and see people smiling, and if we can make someone's day 1% better, whether that be someone internally, whether it be a client or whatever it may be, that's where you win. Because you can make as much money in the world, but if you're not actually changing people's lives, what are you doing it for? And even our product is, we wanted to do something. We sat in a bar called Crows opposite the RDS 3 years ago, and we said we wanted to do something. You could create, you know, with computer vision, we wanted to create something that had impact. That was our biggest thing. What could we create that if we sat in the same pub with someone else in a year's time or in 5 years' time, we told them what we do, they're like, that's really cool. And that's what we wanted to create.
I think that's underrated, doing cool shit.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it's okay just to do cool shit, just because you can. Yeah. I was talking to you two about events, and like, I don't make money from events. It actually cost me money, but I'm like, I just like doing cool things, because you don't know where it goes. You're like, why not? You're going to spend the time anyway. You may as well spend it doing something cool. Mm. Doing cool shit just because you can is underrated.
Yeah.
How do you manage that weight? Because you said something very interesting there about Alonso. How do you manage that weight? Because I look at both you, and you have a lightness. You have like it's a very big, difficult business you're building, and it's very important, and it's people's safety, but you both have a lightness to you. Like, how do you manage carrying that weight of not only what you do, but also the business you're building, combined with how you carry yourselves?
Yeah, and I think we talked about this in the last pod as well, but having a co-founder, one, you get on with, is important. Two, that you challenge each other. And I think in the last year, we've grown a lot in figuring out how to actually really challenge each other. But yeah, having each other, like we're friends outside of work as well, for better or for worse. We do our one-to-ones on Saturday mornings. We go for a run from Black Rock down to Dunleary, down to 40 Foot. Sometimes we jump in, sometimes we don't, depends how cold it is. And we come back and we get a sandwich and we sit down and we talk things out. And I think taking time away from work and doing something that isn't work, even though we're talking about work, because we find it very hard to do things where we talk about things other than work, is really important. And so we run together. We're doing a High Rocks in Malaga. I know you're doing the High Rocks as well.
We're going to have some fun.
See you at the finish line.
We're going to do Malaga together. Yeah, it's going
to be fun. But stuff like that is really important, to get away from work, to get out. We both go to the gym. I don't think if we had the gym or running, we would be sane. We wouldn't have that lightness. But for sure, it's a challenging business to build, and it's a challenging business to scale, because as Dan said, everything we do is people centric, whether it's our team, whether it's our clients, and you can't scale that with technology. You can't just make people with AI and get the AI to talk to the client and get the AI to solve the client's problem. Because there's something really special about going on site, visiting a customer, and actually seeing what they do day to day. I remember one of the site visits we were on last year. We went on site, and it was probably the first time a vendor had visited this guy, because safety people, you know, they don't buy a lot of technology. And so it's really nice to actually interface with them and understand their job is really hard. They probably don't get paid enough for what they do, but they really love it because they're protecting people. And we sat down with this guy, and myself and Dan were just really interested to see what he did on a daily basis. And he couldn't believe that we wanted to see exactly what he did. And he got out his workstation and sat down with us and brought us through how he goes through his reports, who he talks to, what he does with his managers. And you can't beat that, doing that in person versus doing that on a Zoom call. So we put a lot of emphasis on getting on site with customers, spending time with them, actually really understanding their problems. It's hard to scale. It takes people to scale that. But I think the reward comes in that from a product perspective, we have a much better understanding of what they do day to day. From a sales perspective, we actually understand the problems that we're not trying to sell to our clients, we're trying to solve problems for them. And I think there's a difference between the two. It's hard to scale. It's definitely a hard business to build, but something we love doing. So,
how do you retain that as you get bigger, though? Because what you say there makes total sense. But as you get to be a bigger and bigger and bigger company, how can you retain that?
The people-centric piece. It's very easy to get caught up with to say, okay, we're a big business now. We've got to think as a bigger business, like the culture-wise. I don't think that there's a trade-off. I think you always need to be people-centric in everything, because that's where you win a lot of the time. You can make hard decisions for sure, but I think you need to keep it core and make sure that's our job. Our job is to ensure that we keep that core and it's front of mind all the time. It is scalable in the sense of, like, you just build bigger, you have more people, you have more people to be able to go on sites and stuff like that. Like, it's not just ourselves go on sites, all of our team go on sites that are customer facing and spend time with them. And that's really important. But that's a lot of time what helps us win, is because we are so people focused from the customer perspective and spend time with them. But I don't think it's a case where it's you need to sacrifice scale for that.
And there definitely is a scaling challenge with that. You know, you've X amount of resources, you've 50, 55, 60 people now in Protex. We're working with companies that have thousands upon thousands of people. And so how do you work with a team externally that has, you know, 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times the amount of people that you have? And that kind of comes back to culture a small bit and the type of people that we look to bring in into Protex, where, you know, the sum of the collective has to be greater than the actual sum. So 1 + 1 has to be greater than 2. And for that, culturally, you need to ensure that the behaviors that are practiced in the company in Protex actually match the needs of the enterprise customer. And so for us, it's a lot about ownership. It's a lot about urgency. We're big on transparency. We're also big on empathy, because we're, again, super people focused. But the ownership and urgency piece is really important. You know, if a customer has an issue, we need to be on that straight away. Straight away, that customer can't feel like they're not listened to. And that takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of, it takes a certain person behaviorally to be able to be like, I actually care more about the customer than I do doing my task at the moment, because the customer always comes first. And that's kind of a culture that's built in. And, you know, we're very, very lucky in the team that we have, and super excited to bring more people in that add to that and get that flywheel going. Because when it starts going, people see the behaviors happening and they start to replicate that. And it just adds and adds and compounds and compounds.
How do you make sure you keep that, though? How do you get those people? I think that's the biggest thing you hear from everybody. Hiring, 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 yeah. Hiring. Especially now in this market, everybody, like from my barber to you guys, everyone is struggling to hire good people. So how have you thought about this?
Yeah. It doesn't look like your barber soon. Very well in hiring. There's a video on this guy.
I've short hair for a reason.
It looks great. No, you look fantastic.
Go to YouTube if you want to give me some shade in the comments. I'm sure TikTok will be all over that, Dan. Thanks very much.
You look great. Gorgeous. Face for radio.
Keep going. Yeah. My TikTok comments here. This is great.
I think
Kieran clearly does the hiring.
I think of the to ensure you do that, you need to spend time on hiring. Don't just get bums in seats for the sake of. You know, it's a big thing. Like, I think a massive part of it is, like, from our perspective, we have a incredibly high bar when it comes to hiring. Incredibly high bar.
So give me specifics.
I think a big part of it is, like, resilience is a massive part of it, especially what we're doing. So we tend to, and startup suits certain people, startup suits doesn't suit certain other people, and that's okay. You know, there's some people that suit big businesses and do fantastic jobs in big businesses, big corporates, and they're brilliant. The from our perspective, we want people who are very resilient. And what we mean by that is people who are used to being uncomfortable or will actively put themselves in uncomfortable situations. So that could be something like they do marathon running, stuff like that, something that's painful that they will actively put themselves through, or have gone through a really hard time in their life, whether it be like even we've had cases where some people are like, you know, you should hire people who have gone through really, really hard times with family or whatever it is, but they're able to get through it, or if their jobs are hard, so like ex-chefs or stuff like that who've gone through really hard things. So I think it's really important to hire people who've gone through something difficult or actively put themselves in situations like that, because when you go into the hiring side of things, you're going to get the people at when they're at their best. It's that when you see the people at their worst and they're still able to perform, that's where you have really great people. And for us, we always say we only hire A players, because if you hire A players underneath you, they will hire other A players. If you hire B players, they'll hire C and D players, because they don't want those people getting over them. So if you maintain that A player theory or thesis when you're hiring, you're going to have that filter through the organization as it grows.
Give me more on this though, because this is such a pain point for so many people listening to hiring. And I think people do settle, like you said. So how do you not settle? Because obviously there's huge growth behind you. You've raised so much money. I'm sure there's a pressure to grow. How do you keep that bar so high?
There's a couple of things. You know, it's a lot easier said than done. It's very, very hard to, as you said, hire really good people. What do we do with it? I think we treat our interview process as, you know, the experience that a candidate gets in our interview process replicates what it's like in Prodex. So we're very transparent in our interview process. We answer questions. It's probably, you know, we challenge candidates in our interviewing process. And again, that comes from hiring the A players. The managers that are actually hiring these people understand and, you know, understand the expectations of the behaviors and the types of people that we're looking to bring in. We also brought a head of people in quite early in Protex, something myself and Dan felt really strongly about, to really help us hone that culture and also figure out how we can make sure that we go past just writing culture down on a document and making sure that it's practiced. And so we have things like a leveling and progression framework. We have a very structured performance review process. And these are all tools to ensure that once we do bring people in, we can actually grow them. We can allow them to grow and do their best work. We want people that come into Protex to do the best 2, 3, 4 years of work that they will ever do in their career. From a technical perspective, you know, we're solving extremely difficult problems. And so we can test that in the interview process. We can test, based on someone's experience, the types of problems that they've actually solved. How have they coped when, you know, a customer has changed the requirements? What have they done? These types of questions, situational questions. But it's a lot of these things together. It's no one thing. There's no magic bullet. It's, you know, doing a lot of different things together and making sure it's a concerted effort to bring someone in that's actually really going to raise the bar. And really challenge the team as well.
Yeah, I think practically as well, one thing that definitely helped is something we want to do very early on is always have a take home. So everybody who joins has some degree of a take home, because you can talk to talk. Anybody can talk to talk, but you really need
to. What do you mean by a take home?
So take home exercise. So during the interview process, everybody will have a take home of some sort depending on what department they're coming into. So from a sales perspective, it might be a case where they have to do an account planning thing of an account and then pitch that back to us. Or a take home from a coding perspective, or a take home from if they're coming into a people function from a recruiting, how would you map out the next 10 hires of Protex? Where would you look at that and whatnot? So I think it's really important to do that, like test people for it and spend time with them. Because it is it's easier to hire to get bums on seats than the other way around. And especially when people raise, your first thing is we got to hire and stuff like that. And you can get a bit overexcited, I would say, and just be like, yeah, they're great. And you will always see them through rose-tinted glasses because you have the cash to hire them. Whereas you need to take a step back and say, hold on a second, let's go back to our values. What are we looking for here? And make sure we test against them.
You know each other really well at this stage. What have you learned about each other in the last couple of years that you didn't know before?
It's a good therapy session. This is very
good. Just settle down, lads.
No, like genuinely, like me and Kieran have never fought, and it sounds.
Don't
like,
give me one.
No, I swear to God.
Dan,
I swear
don't do
to God.
It. We know each other well enough now.
Ying
don't
and yang,
do it.
Baby. Ying and yang. We always say it. I think a big thing, like the fact we're like best friends outside work, definitely helps. You know, we're very much friends and co-founders, which has helped a lot. Like,
but you're growth individuals. I can see that. Even though I can see the change in you from 23 to now, you're growth individuals. You're wired to grow. So what have you learned about each other in the last couple of years, or what have you learned, what have you grown in the last couple of years?
We both have an exec coach, and probably the best investment that we've made in the last year. We have a lady called Katie and Rachel Turner from VC Talent Labs. Absolutely fantastic. And what's really nice about it is we have the same coach. And myself and Dan are like super transparent and everything. And so we want our coach to link things together that we have challenges with.
Okay.
And so sometimes we have group sessions where we'll talk through something that we're like really struggling to align on, or something, something that we're trying to solve together. But I think we know each other inside out at this stage. You know, I'll know if Dan's having a bad week, he'll know if I'm having a bad week. And again, that's what you need. You need someone there to pick you up, to say, hey, look, noticed on that last session you were quite down, or whatever it was. Let's go for a walk.
I think vice versa, like calling each other out. Like in a meeting, Kieran will say, hey, I think you didn't do that very well. You do better. And like, of course, just your first reaction is like, well, reckon I thought I did a good job there. But at the same time, you have to be able to listen and say, yeah, here, because it's all coming from the right place. I think that's a big part of it. Like we're not competing for the limelight or anything like that to look like one's better than the other. Like we're very much, you know, you always say when you're parents, you shouldn't fight in front of your kids type thing. But I feel like it is a little bit like that. You know, we're very much aligned on what we have to do. So I think when you come in with that side of it, where you're not trying to one up each other,
yeah,
by any means, it makes conversations, it makes life just a lot easier.
We've both realized in the last year we know what we're both good at and not good at, but I think we've really got comfortable with, that's actually not my job. I don't have to do that. This is my job. And
actually, that's a good point. That's one thing that definitely did change.
Yeah.
Because like Kieran is amazing at like operational stuff and writing documentation stuff. And I was like, oh, I got to do that. This is only like about a year ago now, if we're thinking from in between the podcast. And I was like, I got to do it. So I started doing it and I realized I'm really bad at it, you know, but he's really good. And we had the really honest conversation where I said, I'm not doing that well enough. And Kieran was like, that's not your job. Your job is this, and setting vision. My job's this. And I think that's definitely something that's helped a lot. If you sit down and say, well, what is my role in this company? And that will change year on year, which I think a lot of founders don't realize. You know, they think, oh, this is my role for the next 10 years. Like, no, look at it from a 12-month block. This is the type of person I need to be. This is the character I'm playing for the next year. That could change next year.
Yeah, part of you mentioned growth. Part of and to give Rachel Turner a plug, VC Talent Lab, she wrote a book called The Founder's Survival Guide. And it talks about a brave warrior, a considered architect, and a wise monarch. And at each stage of a business, maybe at each stage of a week, you need to show up in a different way as a different type of founder.
Interesting.
And as founders, we always gravitate towards certain things. So I'm, you know, gravitate towards one thing, Dan gravitates towards another thing. But on a specific day or a specific stage of a business, maybe you're going through a fundraise, maybe you're trying to close a big deal, maybe you're trying to, you know, hire an exec. You have to show up in a different way. The brave warrior goes out and, you know, tries to bat every problem down, tries to solve it straight away. You know, fire comes up, you put the fire out, but that doesn't really scale. And especially as you have a team coming in, you know, I can't write code anymore. If I put code into a repository in GitHub, I'll get given out to because I haven't followed the process. And that's important that you understand that you're growing past. I'm a CTO that doesn't actually, I do write some code at the weekend for stress relief. I still do when I get a chance, but it's not my job anymore. I'm more of an architect now on that team, where I'm starting to make design decisions. Likewise with Dan on his side of the house. And so the self-awareness as a founder to recognize that we're now at this stage of the journey, and this is how I need to show up. And maybe I mightn't be there yet, but this is what I need to work on. And so again, we constantly challenge each other with that, as to, you know, I'll say, hey, Dan, I think, you know, this is an area you need to focus on. Likewise, Dan will say, hey, Kieran, I think this is slipping, something we need to actually jump in. I actually think you need to just go in and focus on that. And that constant checking reflection is really what allows you to grow and learn really fast.
What does success mean to you individually? When you look into the future, what would success be? You can't say, I agree with Dan, I agree with
Dan. a good night's sleep, Gary, would be fantastic.
Yeah, that's what we actually, one of our interview questions is like, what is your metric for success? Which I think is really nice to think of. It's something that has to be measurable. And Scott on our team said good night's sleep. Because if you have a good night's sleep, your job's going well, relationship's going well, you're not terribly stressed, and you're sleeping well, and you're waking up refreshed. So it's a good metric for it. It's funny, I remember one of my, and that question didn't come from like an interview thing we read. It was actually one of my friends from home, Dara, who said it to me one time in my last company. And I was like, money's my metric for success. Because if I have more money, I have, the more successful I am. And I was so wrong. You know, I think it's really important to have that harmony in how you work. And have that balance. Because if you're just fixated on cash, and that's why I go back to the people piece. You know, that's why we're in it, and we're having a lot of fun doing it. I think as long as you're having fun, then you're in a good place. But I think for success for me anyway is just as long as you're. I think fun is a big thing, and fun doesn't have to be something that is, you know, constantly happening. There's going to be hard times and stuff like that. But if that's always the case of like you're enjoying it and your enjoyment levels are high, then you're in the right space.
You've had an incredible 4 or 5 years. What's been the hardest moment?
Hardest one.
Individually, what's been the hardest moment?
There was one time we were in your house one time, me and Kieran were just working on, I forget what it was, it could have been this round or the last one even, so I molded in together. But I remember both of our chests hurt. And both of us looked at each other, sitting across the table, and both of us were like this, remember? And that's where I was like, gosh, this is really tricky. Like, it is the toughest thing we've certainly done. Well, I've certainly done anyway, like in life. And it's only been 3 years, you know? But it's definitely most rewarding.
What's been the moment, though, individually? Like, what's been the moment where you're like, oh, because, like, you're an unusual case in terms of it's been an incredible story. But was there a moment that you're like, oh, I'm not entirely sure, A, I want to do this, or B, that it's going to work?
Yeah, the headlines are one thing. And I think, again, as we referenced this in the last pod, there's a lot of stuff behind that doesn't go well. And you're like, God, this really isn't going well. We need to figure it out. There's probably weeks and days. I don't think I could myself pinpoint a moment. Everything kind of just merges together and it just becomes a routine. But there's definitely weeks that you wake up and you're like, I just got to get through this week. I got to figure out how to get from A to B. And it's just a week that you don't enjoy. And then you come back in the next week and you're like, okay, that was actually a tough week. But why was it a tough week? Maybe I didn't get enough sleep. Maybe this specific thing went wrong and that just bugged me for the week. And then the next week is grand. So, and again, in terms of like what we've learned over the last year, that's part of the journey. If you're not having those bad weeks, you're probably not pushing yourself hard enough. You're probably not making enough mistakes. You're probably sugarcoating what's actually happening. It's part of the journey. And as founders, I think we've learned that, you know, that's what we signed up for. Essentially, you know, we're looking to build a business. We're looking to build a business that scales and solves a really big problem, a problem that's really, really hard to solve. And that's not very easy to do. So there's going to be weeks, there's going to be days when...
One thing which I think has contributed to where we are now is we've never doubted ourselves. And I don't think we need to, in the sense of like, we've never... Yeah, you have your imposter syndrome, like, could I be doing this better? But we've never doubted that we're the right people to do it. And I'm
glad
we haven't.
That is so rare.
Yeah, but I'm glad we haven't. You know, I think you need that kind of blissful ignorance a little
How
bit.
Have you not?
Because we kept our heads down. I think we've really just kind of really focused on what we're doing and driving the crap out of this and not getting obsessed with jumping on trends, like you mentioned, not saying, oh, there's now Gen AI, we need to do this, or getting in the limelight. Like, we don't do much public stuff at all. In a good sense, like, yeah, our LinkedIn is good and it's fun and stuff like that. And we do an awesome job in it, but we're not obsessed with saying, hey, we need to make this list or we need to do X, Y, Z.
I hate them so bad.
The lists. Yeah. Yeah. We were on the Forbes. Yeah, we were on the Forbes 30 and the 30. But I mean, like, that was more from, that was one thing we're like, cool.
There is a sense of blissful ignorance in that, like, what you don't know can't hurt you a small bit. And sometimes you need to open Pandora's box and be like, right, I actually need to face into this specific thing. But the journey is step by step. And you see the mountain in front of you, but you have to walk up the mountain step by step. And if you start looking at the mountain and are like, I actually don't think I'm going to get up that last part. Okay, then you're not going to get up the next step. And so there's only one step ahead of you. Walk on to the next step and figure out how to keep walking. We were doing a half marathon last year and I did my calf halfway through. Dan had to literally pull me up the hill. It was in Connemara, so beautiful scenery, uphill the whole way. And I got to the end and I think it was like a kilometer. Dan had finished. I think he beat me by six minutes.
Yeah, I'll give you
7 minutes. Yeah. But there was this woman towards the end and she said, you just have to take one more step. I said, I can't take one more step. I'm wrecked. I got there in the end, but she was right. One more step. And I think because we know where we're going, but we're not thinking about it every day. We're thinking about the next step. We're thinking about next week, next month, next quarter. We're not thinking about next year. Where do we need to be? We've planned that. We know where we need to get to. work backwards from there and figure out, okay, this week is about X, Y, and Z. Next week is about ABC.
I think that's the secret, isn't it? That's like all the great people I've talked to. They live in the now. They live in today. What do we need to do today? Because if you thought about next week, you'd just sit in paralysis.
I think that's why it's difficult for us to answer your question on what does success look like? We don't know.
Mm.
And you use a really good line. It's a lot easier to connect the dots looking backwards. And even like we said, we went through the Series B type thing, and it's really tough when you're going through it. But then at the end, you get a great story and you look back and be like, God, that was tough. But you're laughing about it. Yeah. You know, it's a lot better to look at it that way of saying at some point, I think it's a big thing. At some point down the line, it's going to be okay. Doesn't matter how hard the thing that you're going through now is, at some point it's going to be okay. And you're going to look back and be like, that wasn't as bad as it was, or it was as bad as it was, but we got through it.
How do you stay out of your comfort zone?
I think we're always out of our comfort zone, but that's how you grow. Like it's so easy to stay in the same town or do the same thing, or, you know, I think we're always pushing ourselves, like both personally and in like our, like we're like doing the high rocks thing. We've never done it beforehand. We could be absolutely crap at it. We probably will be really bad at it, but it'd be funny. I think you always have to be doing different things. Both of us are really bad at sitting still. Even during the Christmas holidays and stuff, like we're still kind of like trying to figure out the next thing. And it's important to get your breaks, but once you've done that, we're both kind of like, let's do the next thing.
I think also realizing that it's, you know, there's us as founders, and also then there's the team that we need to lead and direct in terms of where we're going. And realizing that they're also out of their comfort zone a lot of the time as well. They're, you know, some of them are going places they haven't been before. Some of them have been there before. Some of them are doing jobs that they haven't been before, solving problems they haven't been before. And so being out of your comfort zone is just, it's a function of growing. It's a byproduct of growing. And if you're not out of your function zone, out of your comfort zone, then you're probably not growing. And so to go back to that self-reflection part, the self-awareness part, if you're comfortable, you're not growing. And are you comfortable not growing? It's probably the question you need to ask yourself.
Yeah, you usually have to break these interviews down into business, body, brain, because a lot of people just talk business. But it's interesting that like how this conversation is weaved in and out of that. I think you're kind of like the new generation of founders, which is kind of where I'm taking the podcast, is that you're able to balance. And someone said to me, it's not about balance, but harmony. And I was like, oh, that makes way more sense. Because we think of like 33, think of these three buckets. Whereas like, it's not, because sometimes like in the fundraising, it's 99%.
Mm-hmm.
And when he said that, I was like, yeah, that's kind of it. It's harmony and periods, because you will have periods where you're out of balance. So like sometimes it's kind of probing just to see what you say to, you know, the success question and things like that. I do want to know your founder formula for success though, individually, no copying each other's homework.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have a formula? Because I want everyone to kind of like give me their scientific formula. So X plus Y plus this over time equals success. Obviously, success is all relative. We know that now from your answer. But do you have a formula you can keep in your head?
Do we got a calculator to calculate the...
You definitely don't need it. Dan might need some help. But you definitely don't need it. You see, it comes back around, Dan.
So one of my... read a book recently. One of my engineers, David, gave it to me. It's called Principles by Ray Dalio.
It's very good. It's a chunky read.
I didn't read the whole thing. I'm not going to claim good. I read the whole thing. I read it in chunks and I've read little snippets of it. That's the way I read books. I find it hard to read end to end. I prefer to read like snippets and take away what I can. But one of the formulas in it is pain plus reflection. And we've talked a lot about pain. We've talked a lot about reflection. Pain plus reflection equals improvement. And it's a very, very simple formula to say, you know, if you take away the reflection part, you've pain not equaling improvement. And so if you're just hurting all the time, if you're failing all the time and you're not reflecting, you're not improving. If you have the reflection without the pain, if you're constantly reflecting on, we did amazing there and that was great, we closed that deal, and you're not actually reflecting on the painful things, then you're not going to improve. And so I think that's something that's just wired into us, is that we fail a lot. But we reflect a lot. We have conversations as to what worked, what didn't work. And hopefully you should improve off the back of it.
There is this myth, isn't it, that startups should be in pain all the time. And I'm like, I think you're doing it wrong then. I think if you're in pain all the time, you've just built a bad business. Mm-hmm. You haven't thought about the other side of things. Dan?
I don't know. And I'm kind of glad that I don't know.
Oh, what?
No, I am. I swear to God. I mean, it's all Zen, baby. No, I think
Dan's formula. Don't know.
Just don't. I think from my perspective,
day by day.
What? Yeah. No, but do you know what I did do? A few years ago, I used to always make these plans of what success looks like and what things would look like in 5 years. These 5-year, 10-year plans. Like when I was in college, I was like, I'm going to work in the EU, I'm going to learn French and live in Brussels, and I'm going to be a EU commissioner. And I realized I'm terrible at French. And I was like, okay, well, that dream is gone. But I had this kind of whole thing. And then I think if you set up these like success plans of what it looks like, you're just going to disappoint yourself. So I actually, personally, in my personal life, I don't make plans past 2 months. Yeah, for the business, we create these plans and stuff for the year. But like Kieran said, we're kind of focused on what's happening next. And I purposely don't, because I think it's a good way to be. I think that was success is like the way I look at success, rather than a formula, but how I look at success is there was a guy called Vincent O'Malley who I used to work with, and he said you should play your life how you play Trivial Pursuit. Have you ever played Trivial Pursuit before? Have you not? A lot of people haven't played it whenever I mentioned this, but it's a very popular board game. This answer
is going not where I thought it was.
Very popular board game.
Okay, I'll settle down for this. Go on.
Sit down. So can we fast forward, whoever is listening to this, put this on 2x. So you have this pie, you have different colors you got to get in the pie. You got to go around the board and get one color of each wedge. So if you have 5 blues, you got to actively make the decision to get rid of a blue to put in the red.
Okay.
Board. So a history question or whatever. But you can't progress in the game until that is one of each color.
Okay.
So for me, what my success looks like, or how am I measuring it, or how am I looking at that sum, is that pie has to be relatively as balanced as I can before I can progress in the game.
Okay.
That wasn't that bad.
It wasn't great, but yeah, it wasn't bad. But I'm going to put down, play life like Trivial Pursuit, Dan Hobbs. So when you have your $1 billion exit, I'll be like,
they can sponsor
you. Yeah, but look what he said in this podcast.
Exactly. Really good at board games.
We're going to do our quickfire round. This is new since you guys were on last time. The book question I did ask you last time, so I'll ask you again. What book would you recommend every founder should read?
There's another book called The Advantage, and it's about... It's basically balancing like the business as like an engine, and also the health of the business. So the people, the leadership team, the team. And a lot of people focus on the business engine itself and not so much on the actual team that actually drives the engine. And so it's about that balance. Really, really good book.
The Advantage. Never heard of it. Yeah. Okay.
Mm, really, really good one. The last podcast I mentioned that it was a strategic selling book that sounded really boring, but worked really well. I made a promise to you that I would read more from that. I read a book and a half since in 2 years, which is pretty good. But what I've done,
age a day.
Yeah. I'm a really slow reader. I found I've got the reading level of like a 6-year-old. So like even when I read documents internally, what we do in meetings. Actually, one thing's really good for meetings is if you have a memo before the meeting, if you have a team meeting, and then the first 5 minutes of the meeting, everybody reads it.
The Amazon thing, I think, is genius.
That's really good.
It's brilliant.
Jack introduced it from our team.
You see, Kieran reads books and he knows where it comes from.
He's real fast. Everybody will finish the doc and they'll be putting thumbs up, and I'm like, I haven't got past the first paragraph.
ChatGPT, give me a summary.
Yeah, I should get that on it. But there's one book I like is Founder's Mentality. It's really good and talks about like customer obsession and things like that. Another one which is really kind of a wider play one is which I'm reading at the moment is Rumsfeld's Rules. So he was chief of staff for Gerald Ford when he was president, and he worked as like Secretary of Defense. He was also CEO of a couple Fortune 500 companies. But it looks at it from a power perspective, and I think you can make a lot of, like, especially at Series B where you're working a lot more people externally and internally from a CEO perspective, understanding how power works and power shifts is really interesting. And power doesn't mean intimidation or assertiveness or anything like that. It's just a shift of power, and when do you play that card, when do you not?
Yeah.
I think that's a really important thing to learn when you're at the kind of Series A, Series B, Series C level.
Nice. They're all new recommendations, so it's brilliant. What's something you'd learn the hard way?
I mentioned earlier, there comes a point in time when the CTO can't write code and push into the code base. So I think when there's processes that are brought in by a team, following the processes, I've learned that the hard way, and the team will attest to that.
Nice.
Similar, I think the trust piece, like you're bringing in people to do the job and tell you what to do ultimately. So I think it's a big part of it is like being able to be okay with that and trusting people and to get the job done. And we've got an awesome, like, I'm so excited for this year. We've got the most brilliant team in place. But making sure that you revert back to, I brought this person in to do a job, and let them do it.
What have you sacrificed to achieve your success?
A lot.
Like?
Oof. We're going very deep here. Okay, Gary.
Guys, if only if he doesn't cry, yeah. I failed the Bartlett test.
Definitely, time is a good one. Time is out the window. I think another thing that's like not talked about a lot is like you actually sacrifice, your brain is cycling the whole time. The chemistry of your brain changes when you build a business because you're constantly thinking about that Slack message. Is that going to come true? The email that I sent, going back to Dan on his formula, velocity should definitely be in Dan's formula because Dan responds to emails before I've even opened it and it'll say sent 2 seconds ago and Dan will have already replied. So I think this constant like time sacrifice because you're constantly thinking, and that's sometimes an unhealthy thing. It's sometimes what allows you to accelerate.
Yeah. I think when we mention time, it's like time with people and things you do. Like I definitely don't see my friends half as much as I should and family, which I think both of us have taken like the active decision, like that doesn't mean by that pie, like take the active decision to take out a little bit of work to put in family stuff, or like you have bringing your mother like in your calendar and stuff, which is really nice. I have a new nephew, first one in the family, so like cool. Actively making the time to go up and spend time with him, and because time goes so quickly, maybe because I turned 30 this year, but like time does go really quickly, so it's important to reflect, double check yourself and cop yourself on, because it's easy to be selfish with your time when you start a company.
Okay, a little bit more of a fun question. What would you do today if I give you 10 million euro?
Ooh. I go back to your question. Who would I invest it in? What's also really nice about Protex is we've Protex alum. We've some people that have left Protex that are setting up businesses, setting up startups, Dublin. Some,
yeah, it's going to be the Protex Mafia in Protex 20 Mafia. Years.
And that's going to be that photo, that iconic photo of the PayPal Mafia.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The Protex alum.
So probably invested in them. I think, you know, all of them are really exciting and think they'll do something really, really exciting.
My thing, even though it's 10 million, like I'd love to do something like totally different to, or do we even mention like, oh, should we invest in a cafe or something like that? I like doing things that's what the running stuff is, having your outlets past business. Yeah. I think it's really important. So investing in things like that. So,
Dan wanted to go swimming with orcas in Norway. Was it?
Yeah, it's really close. Yeah. I'm going to do it with one of our clients. Yeah. He's already said he wants to. That's something about being friends past business. You know, he's a global head for Ferrero, and he used to be a tour guide. Awesome guy, Gerald.
Flash forward. Yeah. Co-founder tragically injured in orca incident.
Yeah, or take one home as a pet. That's what I do with 10 million. I'd buy an orca.
Build a giant lake.
I'd buy an orca. Bye. There you go.
It's probably the best answer we've had. Right, on that vein, I'm going to give you 1 million euro each to invest in one company, one person. Who is it?
Oof.
Don't say each other. Don't be that cheesy.
Like there's a lot of Irish companies.
Irish ones or in general?
Whatever you want.
There's a lot of Irish companies. There's I'm going to go maybe slightly different. There's a lot of Irish companies, a lot of Irish founders that have been on the pod, but so I'm going to pick someone outside of Ireland. There's a company called Continuum Industries based out of Edinburgh, and they do AI, generative AI for infrastructure builds. So if you're trying to build a power line from A to B and you want it to be sustainable, or you want it to be more budget friendly, or you want it to preserve this specific piece of land, their generative AI agent actually generates the path.
Interesting. Continuum Industries. Dan?
I would take both of our millions each, and now that it's finally turned around and getting NDRC back on the road, but if the government didn't do it, I would have given it ourselves and got it running. So I think it was an absolute farce that was even considered being taken off the table.
Such a PR answer. like, reshare, sign the petition.
Hey, you benefit from that as well, Gary, for God's sake. We're getting paid for this, aren't we? Are we getting paid for this?
Yeah. Eventually. Enterprise Ireland helps to support and fund a vibrant startup ecosystem, providing supports, insights, and network connections to the most ambitious Irish startups. From expert advice to raising funding, exploring opportunities in international markets, to strategic planning, Enterprise Ireland is here to support you in those important startup moments. For more information about how Enterprise Ireland can support you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Enterprise Ireland, helping Irish startups go global. If you're starting from zero in 2024, what would you build? You can answer that together or separately.
We definitely do it together.
Dan has this mad idea. Never been done before.
Gonna happen.
An AI golf ball that you can track the golf ball.
No, this again, is the man that slagged AI dumbbells a half an hour ago.
Hold on a second now. Not an AI golf ball, an AI. This, someone's going to steal it now. If someone makes it, fantastic. A CCTV system for golf courses. So
just for context.
We're both really bad at golf. No, sorry. I'm really bad at golf.
I would say Dan's very bad. He has some rounds where he loses a lot of balls, some rounds where he doesn't. And the rounds he loses a lot of balls, this is the idea that comes out.
I think I've contributed to like 2% of Titleist's revenue last year.
Anyone buys a lake ball from you.
Probably. I should start marking them. I'll sign them.
They'd be worth money eventually.
Yeah. So it's a CCTV system for golf courses so that your ball never gets lost. Instead of, because if you tamper with the ball, you're going to change the ball's consistencies of it. But if you have a camera in place where it tells you exactly where your ball is, you never lose a ball. Tells you where it is. What do you mean, that's a really good idea.
Yeah.
Okay, right. I think there's also, based on what we've seen and some of the problems that we're solving, the whole like buying process for IT, AI, cybersecurity, there's a product that sits there. I'm not exactly sure what the product is, but it's a product to allow the transaction between vendors and AI, ethics, privacy, legal. That whole process at enterprise is so fragmented, and there's definitely an opportunity to consolidate it.
Yeah, I think like a similar type of vein of that is like Luke Mackey doing with Coda and stuff like that. Like that's a really good idea. Just like those really tough interaction stuff of documentations. That would be an interesting one.
What do you believe that other people find strange or strongly disagree with?
Oof. God, these are hard questions, Gary.
Yeah,
good. We didn't get these before to prepare.
If you listen to the
podcast, I knew it was coming out. Yeah, this moment. Yeah.
I should go first.
That startup is a bad choice in a career. Jack said it on your podcast, Jack Pierce. As well, that you know, you can get hired if you fail at a startup. You still have like the experiences you learn during this is incredible. It's 50 times what anyone would learn in any other job because you're doing everything. And a lot of people think that startup is like a bit of a wayward track. I think in Ireland specifically, we're really bad at that. You know, we just assume that you should walk the walked path. And I think a lot of people can think that startup is something that's a bit wayward or really, really difficult and stuff. But I think it's the best thing you can do to learn and innovate. And if we want to make Ireland this awesome company, if you look, go to San Fran, everyone's doing it. Go to New York or in Austin, everyone's doing it. So, and we've got one of the best workforces in the world. So why can't we create these mega companies out of here? And we need more people making startups to do that.
For sure. I agree with that wholeheartedly. The internet lost its mind about that comment. Go to TikTok after this and look at the comments on that.
Easy for him to say.
I honest to God, it was an eye-opener into why we don't. I'll put it to you that way.
Yeah.
If you go and look at the TikTok comments on that video from Jack, it was an eye-opener of why we don't, because people's mentality of like, oh yeah, easy for him to say, blah, 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 blah. Every excuse under the sun was listed there. It was bananas. You're on.
I got one. To a similar vein, I think people who go into a career and then pivot. So whether it's a software engineer that started in, you know, as a biologist or started as an accountant and went into software, I find it really interesting to look at the psychology of someone who has done something and then pivoted and how they've transferred those skills across. And they always have just this slightly different way of thinking. And that kind of diversity in the way they think is just super valuable. Probably something that people don't disagree with, but I think it's something that we've spotted in terms of like pattern matching over the last couple of years.
That's an interesting insight, actually. It's not something I'd considered before, but it probably goes back to your resilience piece. They've been resilient enough to do it and then resilient enough to leave it behind. It's often really good careers. I was getting my eyes checked the other day, and my ophthalmologist, and I went afterwards, and my mom was like, oh, do you know he was a lawyer before? I was like, I did not. So like two chunky careers going one after the other. Like it's wild. What's been your worst investment? Can be anything. Can be personal, can be professional, can be anything.
Before I answer, maybe the not investing enough in yourself. It's so easy in this job to do stuff for other people. Like our whole job is to do stuff for other people ultimately. So it's hard to reverse that and invest in yourself. And we were probably slow to do that at the start. really funny photo of the two of us in San Fran. We're like twice the size as we are now. And we're like, oh, we need to change that. But I think it's the lack of investment in ourselves probably is what I would say.
Okay.
I'm going to cop out and say the exact same. I think it's, you know, you're so quick to investment in yourself in that, like, you know, gym membership, just take time investment. So time investment to go out and go for a run. For me personally, you know, if I come home and have a long day, runners go on and I just go out the door. And I just love, what I love running is go down to Sandyman Strand. The rain is in my face, the wind is in my face, and it's just beautiful.
And people can't see you cry.
Exactly. Yeah, it's
you're going to cry in the shower.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely over-investing in yourself.
What's your best investment? Follow on that, because I think you're taking me down this road now. What's your been your best investment?
Best investment, probably this thing, a Garmin watch. Genuinely, this Garmin watch or my Oura Ring that I use to sleep. My sleep needs a lot of work, and that's what I'm going to work on in 25. But myself and Dan, as we've probably talked about, heavily into running last year. I love tracking it and competing with myself to get better. I remember one day last year I went out and just randomly ran a PB in 5K. And just the idea that you can constantly beat yourself at any given moment in time, I think it just makes running addictive. We talked about that with Hyrox as well. It's the same kind of addictive personality, beating yourself at what you've already done.
If I don't track it and put it on Instagram, it means nothing to me. Dan?
Yeah, we're on Strava recently. I love Strava. I think a couple of things for me. I think from a business side, the executive coaches we got, I think that was really good. Like, it's ultimately a therapy session to a degree, a business therapy session. Yeah. And it's lovely to have that, because it's, I think what people struggle to understand is it can get very lonely at the top. Like, if you're coming into a startup, the book ends with you. So, like, you having to perform or whatever it may be, and that's tough and it's taxing. So having that outlets, making sure you have your outlets are really important, to invest in your outlets. So, like, one's our executive coach, but just do like a bit of music, do running, stuff like that, but always have your outlet and understand what your outlet is and invest in your outlet, because it's so easy to not do it. And that's where, you know, you got to think of it as you got to put yourself in the best position to help others. It's the whole thing of the, when you're on an airplane, you put your mask on first before you can put it on someone else. So I think it's really important. And then the second thing is probably my nephew. I've just put a lot of time into it and into him, and I'm really glad I have, and want to do more with the family and stuff like that. That time investment has been lovely. And spending more time with, in the last little while, like, we just got back from a ski trip that we said start with a lot of our friends. That was really nice, and you come back and you're mentally refreshed from it.
You level set again,
big time, in a lovely
body
sense.
Body's quite sore from it.
Ego is bruised.
Quite a lot of falls, but mind is.
We'd really humbling when we were going down this like green slope, and we were like, "We're acing this. We're such good skiers. We can take on anything here." And like a trail of ducklings in the form of toddlers just came past us and like went past. And we're like, we had to be like, "Excuse me, I'm so sorry," to these 3-year-olds. So. That's something to improve. Maybe invest in next year.
Invest in skiing. What's your final piece of advice to every founder or aspiring founder listening?
I think my biggest piece of advice is that internal dialogue that sits in your head that's constantly talking to you. Start to leverage that in a way that allows you to reflect inwardly and challenge yourself inwardly, because I guarantee you're not as good as you think you are. And the minute you start to realize that, it's really refreshing, it's really powerful, and it's really freeing, really. And if you can start to change that dialogue from maybe an anxious dialogue or whatever that dialogue is, start to change it to questions and ask yourself questions. How could I have done that better? The next time I have this conversation, how could I make that person feel better? And so training your inner dialogue to be more self-reflecting and more aware of the situations you're in, the environments you're in, the people you're interacting with. I think that's something that's really, really powerful.
Follow that one.
Yeah, it was a good one, wasn't it? Yeah, I was just going to say do it, but just do. But that is really just like, if you're thinking about it, do it. I think another thing is like, which I think a lot of, and it goes back to that whole thing you said of, oh, you can just go and raise 2 million, no problem. I think really what we've learned over the last few years is that every conversation will give you something. That's a really big thing I've learned, and I'm glad the two of us, and it goes back to that people-centric thing, is like everybody has something, whether it be a 5-year-old, whether it be a, you know, your bus driver, whether it be whoever it may be, everybody has a story and everybody has something to give. And really lean on that, because you can get so caught up, especially if you are doing well. You're like, I'm not talking to that person. I couldn't be arsed talking to them, or whatever, their opinion doesn't matter. I think it's an awful way to be, as not only as a founder, but as a human. So I think it's really important to understand that everybody has their own story and are their own main character. And it's important to listen to them, but you can learn from everybody.
You pulled it out of the fire.
Did I?
Yeah. They're strong, lads. I like how you pretended not to have prepared and right at the end. Two gems. Where can people learn more about yourselves and Protex?
So our LinkedIn is a good time. It's a good for entertainment purposes alone. Dave and Leanne and Tebow have that rocking. But check us out on LinkedIn. From our perspective, we're actively hiring now. We want, like we said at the start, that we want our A players in. We don't settle for B players. If you're an A player listening, head over to ProjectsAI /careers. And check us out. We've got a lot of roles available. So check us out on that. But follow our LinkedIn. We're on that. We're on a really exciting journey here. We want to make one of Ireland's biggest companies. If you go down the Liffey, you can see the Salesforces and the HubSpots and awesome companies. But we really want to be one of them. Put our name on the side of a building, and we want the best people to help us get there.
Love it. Love the ambition. I think that's what we need in Ireland. I think we're nearly there. Mm-hmm. I think there's something happening, like with the breed of founders like yourselves coming through. I think there is going to be huge companies built here that they haven't had to leave. Lads, that was fantastic. I'll see you again 2 years for a check-in, okay?
Sounds good.
Thanks,
Chris.
Thanks, lads.